Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you every Sunday night by Core Sports and by California 1020. That's cal1020.com, 10 miles, 20 bands, tons of fun, and the Challenge Athletes Foundation. You can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio, on iTunes. Our next guest, one of our favorite people on the planet. He's ran 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. He's won Badwater, you name it. Dean Karnazes has done it. Mr. Dean, how the hell are you?
I'm not worthy of that introduction, but I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
You are always, always, always. It's funny, I was looking at this stuff, and I'm going, oh, my God, I can't believe the 50 marathons in 50 days, 50 states. Was that 2006?
I can't even keep track anymore. People ask me, and I get the years wrong.
Wow. So the other thing I didn't realize is, I know you ran in high school, and you had a coach that you really, really liked, Jack McTavish. But then when you switched high schools, you had a coach you really didn't care for, and you didn't run for 15 years?
I hung up my running shoes, yeah. I was a teenage kid.
Right.
Troubled, I got an argument with a track coach. I didn't like his style, barking at me and pounding on his clipboard, and I just said, I don't need this.
Right.
And walked away from it.
Walked away from it. So what did you replace it with?
I got into surfing.
Yep.
And this is going to sound funny, but I actually got a surf scholarship for college.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
In Iowa? Where was that?
Yeah, it was in Minnesota. No, I was in San Clemente, so not far from San Diego, and I got a surf scholarship for college, and then got really into windsurfing.
I remember
that became my life. I turned professional, worked my way through college as a pro windsurfer. So the passion for sport never went away. It just kind of shifted gears.
So was that the Robbie Nash era?
That was Robbie Nash. Yeah, he was a good friend of mine, and that guy's still a hero of mine.
Oh my God, what a legend! That was amazing. So windsurfing, and there was actually a point there where people could make a half-decent living, at least at the top end of that.
Well, they say windsurfing is the sport that thrived in the 80s and died in the 90s.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point, you remember Big Pens? I mean, they were making windsurf boards. It was a big industry. We had big trade shows, and now none of that stuff exists.
It's gone.
Gone. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly that sport came and went.
So then get married, move to Northern California, and we're basically working a regular job, right? When you've had sort of a transformational moment.
No, I was a working stiff. I mean, I went through college, I went through graduate school, I went through business school, got the MBA, had all the credentials, had this cush corporate job, and just hated my life. It wasn't me, Babbitt. It was kind of like you being a school teacher. I mean, you felt a higher calling somewhere else.
You wanted, I can relate. I just left the corporate world and then went off on my own. It's the same type of thing. You just, after a while, you know you need to be somewhere else.
Well, that all culminated on the night of my 30th birthday when I was in a bar drinking bad tequila with my buddy celebrating my 30th birthday. And that, it came to a flashpoint there, and I just walked out of that bar that night. As you said, having not run since high school, and said, I'm going to run 30 miles right now to celebrate my 30th birthday.
And we're not talking middle of the day. We're talking dark. You're just running along, running along the side of the road?
Running along the side of the road in my freaking boxer shorts. I didn't even own running gear. Had a pair of gardening shoes on. Yeah, and I'll never forget that night. I mean, it changed the course of my life. And I used to commute from San Francisco to a place called Santa Cruz, which you probably know. And
sure.
I knew if I made it to Half Moon Bay, that was exactly the 30-mile mark. And so I just followed that same route and sobered up about halfway through, about mile 15, and thought, what the heck am I doing?
Well,
this is absurd, but,
Imagine if a police come up and you're in your, basically, you're in your tighty whities and you're running along the coast and you're a little tipsy. Rather than all of a sudden going, okay, I've found my real calling, I want to run, it could have been, Mr. Karnazes, can you please get in the car? We're putting you away, you're a little crazy. So
ironically, I didn't even have any ID on me. I thought I was a crazy homeless guy, which I probably look like.
Yeah, I bet. So how do you, you know, usually somebody calls the wife and goes, "Hey, by the way, I know I was supposed to be home a couple hours ago. I'm in Half Moon Bay."
Yeah, no, there was a 7-Eleven right on the corner there of Highway 1, and this is prior to the cell phone. So I went to a payphone.
Oh, I forget
called
about
or
that.
Collect.
Yeah.
Yep, in the morning, sun was just coming up. You know, I had run straight through the night, about 7.5 hours. And, you know, I woke her up, and she said, "Where are you? I mean, you've never done this before. You've never come home." And I said, "You know, I'm fine. Everything's okay. I need a ride. And she's like, "Well, where are you at?" And I said, "Well, I'm out in front of 7-Eleven. And she said, "Oh, that 7-Eleven down the street, you know, on Geary Street?" And I said, "No, the 7-Eleven Half Moon Bay." She said, "What? What are you doing in Half Moon Bay?" And I said, "Well, I ran there." She said, "You ran from where?" I said, "Well, I walked out of the bar and basically ran to Half Moon Bay." And she said, "You don't sound very stable. Just hold tight, and I'll be right there."
Wow.
And she came and picked me up. I am promptly passed out in the passenger seat, literally. And that was it. That launched my career as an athlete again.
I mean, did you go at that point and go tell your boss, "You know what, I've realized my true calling is I'm just going to put running shoes on and run different events around the world"? What was the next step?
You know, I baby stepped into it, and I did the things that everyone listening to this interview who's a working stiff, or yeah. I shouldn't say a working stiff, who's got a career,
right,
can relate to. I mean, you know, you do things like you run at lunchtime when everyone else is, you know, having lunch somewhere, and,
yep.
You know, you take a quick sponge bath in the sink.
Yep.
You know, you just do what you need to do. You get up at 4 in the morning, and you train before work, you train after work. And I started doing all that kind of stuff. And then it just, at a point, you know, I just saw that I loved athletics and sports so much better than working. So I'll never forget saying to my wife, "You know, I'm gonna leave my job." You know, and here I had a paycheck. It's hard. It's scary to walk away from this stuff. You have
benefits, 401k, all that stuff. Yeah,
I mean, health care.
Yep.
And she looked at me and she said, "I just wondered why it took you so long."
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she, you know, obviously I've got a very supportive family.
You think?
That has helped a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, at that point, were you a parent?
Yeah, I had a daughter and everything.
Wow. So you had a child, and you're basically saying, "I'm going to toss away our security, and I'm not quite sure how I'm going to make a living doing this running thing, but I'm going to do this running thing."
I shouldn't even say I had a child quite yet. Flashing back on it, I ran the Western States 100-mile endurance run, and we had child on the way.
Okay.
My wife was pregnant. She was just finishing dental school. I mean, it was a tumultuous time.
Yeah.
And not the right time to step out of a job. I just, you know, I felt like if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it.
Right. Well, once you have your child, then it's like, well, now for sure I can't. We got insurance. We got all the rest of this stuff we have to deal with. So when you, after you ran Western States and made the decision, what was the next step? Was it, okay, how do I, you know, it's one thing to say I want to make a career in running. And people then go out and start a shop. They go become a sales rep. They do something like that. But your the course you created was something that had never been done before.
Well, I kind of used some of my marketing skills in that regard. I kind of, you know, flashed on the landscape and said, you know, if some of the best ultra marathoners in the world cannot really make a full time go of it just by winning races. I mean, I looked at Ann Trason, who's a
the best
hero
ever
of mine,
yeah, yeah,
and said, "My gosh, this woman wins everything, and you know she's still, you know, she's a runner. I mean, she gets a belt buckle at the end of
right.
Western States,
get a bagel and
got
a t-shirt,
you know,
yeah, yeah."
And she was hours ahead of me, and I thought, "There's got to be more to it. You'll never be able to, you know, feed your incoming daughter with belt buckles." So, you know, I kind of pieced things together. Thankfully, this great company that I work with, that's still my sponsor, The North Face, came to me at the finish of the race, and they said, "You know, you're a marketing guy. You've got that business experience. We want to get into trail running. You know, we see that snow sports is kind of diminishing with
yeah,
you know, the course of global warming. You know, yep, global climate change." And they said, "We want to develop some running shoes. You know, some athletic apparel for performance. Would you like to be involved?" You know, I mean, what a chance encounter that was. And I thought, yeah, let me think about it. And I
yeah,
sure,
for about
sign
a minute
me up.
And a half.
So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I got that gig going, and then, you know, I thought, I'm going to write a book. I wanted to write a book, just like many people do. It was kind of on the life list. And I thought, I'll write a book, and just because I want to do it. So I wrote a book, and I thought, okay, now if I can convince 10 of my buddies to buy this, I'll be lucky.
Yeah.
And you kind of know the history from there. I mean, it became a New York Times bestseller, and I thought, hold it.
Yeah.
Who wants to read about some guy running, you know, kind of changing his life, this transformation, and turning it into his true passion?
Everybody did.
Everybody. I mean, there's a story there, and there's many people that aspire for that. And I thought, you know, that there's the magic. Help other people realize their dreams, and you can make a go of it.
Because then it's not just your story resonates. It's, okay, this guy is not, he doesn't look like your typical skinny ultra guy, right? He looks like a normal guy. And look at his background. He was a, you know, windsurfer. He's a surfer. Somebody you can relate to. He's a parent. Do you feel that that played a role in the way the book was received?
Absolutely. I mean, it was aspirational. I mean, like you said. I mean, they look at other. You know, you look at the guys who are winning marathons. Let's be honest. I mean, most American males, you know, can't relate to that. I mean, an African that's insanely fast.
Who grew up in the Rift Valley at 10,000 feet? Yeah,
lifestyle completely different. I mean, you know, physiology completely different. And, you know, most people like me greatly admire them, but it's not something you really aspire to. I mean, you can't be a father and, you know, and an employee, you know, a business person with that lifestyle. It's completely different.
So you signed with North Face, and then did you start thinking, okay, as a marketing guy, I better create some sort of buzz here. I got to create something. What was the genesis of 50 marathons, 50 days, 50 states? Because that, to me, that's really where the name, the book was out there, but the movie and that the adventure was really what took you to the next level.
Well, I think that's exactly, you captured the word when you said adventure. I think people long for adventure. I mean, so many people come up to me these days and they're like, I'm perpetually trying to PR in the marathon, and it's like chasing a windmill.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, and I'm kind of over it. I can't get up in the morning to train anymore. I'm like,
I'm burned out.
I did Boston a handful of times. You know, what's next? And it's turned more to turning running into just a passion and an adventure. Not necessarily, you know, winning races. I mean, going out and you know, conceiving your own sort of adventures and doing them and seeing if you can, you know, you can persist and make it. And a lot of people find that to be greatly rewarding, just as rewarding as finishing any race. And I thought, you know, the challenge of running 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 days is relatable, because most people, you know, can relate to a marathon. They know that even if they haven't run one, you know, they saw their office mate the next day barely able to, you know, crawl up the stairs kind of thing. And I thought, you know, if I can somehow do 50 in 50 days, that's really going to break through and speak to people. And I think it kind of did.
What I found was fascinating about it, and watching the film, it's, you think about it, hey, this is Dean's journey. He's going to run 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. And I'm sure this part took you by surprise as well, is when you went to each market and you're going to run the marathon, and here's this group there to meet you and run with you. One, you know, I don't know if you had a sense that anybody would turn up to go, hey, let's go run a marathon in the middle of a Tuesday. But also the stories of what running had done for them and what it meant to them and what they'd overcome through it. Did all of that surprise you?
Oh, it was remarkable. I mean, it was like a Forrest Gump moment, I tell people.
Yeah.
You know, it was the momentum built. I mean, as more and more people learned about this, like you said, we had hundreds of people at the start of these marathons showing up every day to run with me, and I got invitations from schools like, hey, you're running by my school, can you stop in and say a few words to the kids? And it just became this, it became bigger than me, and that was something I was really hoping for, and I think we achieved that. I think it was this show of community and kindred spirit. I think every endurance athlete can relate to this, no matter your age or your ability. We've all, you know, we all know what it feels like to suffer. We all know the hardships we face, and I think that brings us together. And this show of unity was just the magic in it all.
Now, could you imagine, because we're talking 06, can you imagine with social media today, if you brought that back and did that again? Oh, my God. It would be gigantic. It was gigantic then, But if you think about it, the world is so much more social now and so much more connected. It would be all just totally crazy. The other aspect of that trip, which I loved, was when you went and ran at schools. I think that most kids thought of running as a punishment. And we're dealing with childhood obesity, and you've got Carnot Kids, your program you're doing there. But did that surprise you as well, that how open the kids were to running? Because there is that feeling that, oh, my God, running is a punishment.
I was blown away. I mean, kids naturally love to run. And the other thing that really surprised me is how supportive the kids were of each other.
Right.
I mean, even the little pudgy kids went out and tried. They did their best. And I just thought that was, you know, a kid is willing to try. They don't have that vanity that we have as we get older. They don't have all those layers. And they went out and they did it. And they ran a mile with me. And the other kids celebrated that. And it was just, it was really surprising. It's obviously something we need desperately here in not just in America. I mean, there's a phenomenon called Globesity. And as I travel around the world, it's impacted the entire world.
What now, when you look at the adventures that you created, you ran the 50 marathons, 50 days, 50 states, and then you upped the ante and ran 75 miles a day, over 3,000 miles. Was it 75 miles, 75 days, something along that line?
Yeah, I can't even keep track anymore. It was crazy.
So when you start something like that, you're okay, day one, I'm done with 75. You're going, oh, my God, I got to get up. I'm one day into a 75-day, and I've got this huge bus for Regis and Kathy Lee, or Regis and Kelly, and there's a lot of – that's a fair amount. It's one thing to get into a race and go, oh, you know what, I've got a little bit of a twinge, I'm out. But you've got a huge group of folks depending on this. You got sponsors. You've got the TV guys. How do you handle that type of pressure? To me, that's the most amazing pressure there is, because everything is wrapped around you getting from point A to point B each and every day.
Yeah, you I think captured the intensity of that event, and it was a run across America. So I was scheduled to run 3,000 miles. I had to run 40 to 50 miles every day for 75 days.
Oh, that was it, 40 to 50 a day, yeah.
Yeah, to stay on the quote-unquote production schedule. So as you stated, I mean, this was a made-for-TV event. And, you know, there was there was no failing. I mean, the ABC television had sold multi-million-dollar sponsorship and commercial packages, you know, to the likes of Walgreens and Eucerin. I mean, there was a lot on the line. And if I was just to die the first day, those TV buys are not going to be worth anything. So it was a high stakes thing, and you were there, Babbitt, with me on the at the start. At Disneyland. I mean, how amazing was that? A fireworks show. No one had ever run down Disneyland. Down the Magic Kingdom before. We ran right out of there. The Goodyear blimp overhead.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so ironic because the audiobook for my third book, which is just called Run, 26.2 Stories of Blisters and Bliss.
Yeah.
It just came out, and not literally just this morning, I listened to the kind of the intro, which was a recap of the that Live with Regis and Kelly run across America, and that first day left me exhausted. I was nauseous. I got severe dehydration. I threw my electrolytes out of balance. I was breathing that, running through L.A.
Oh, yeah, the
that
air.
Smog.
Yeah.
I've never been so destroyed the first day of an event that's supposed to go for 75 days. And I was laying in my hotel bed that night, so depressed, just thinking, God, I'm so stiff right now. I'm nauseous. I feel horrible. How am I going to get out of bed and run, 50 miles tomorrow? And not only that, that next morning I was scheduled to talk to 2,000 school kids. And the state senator, Tom Torlakson, was going to honor my presence.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm not going to be able to crawl out of bed. How am I going to make it to this media event? And somehow, you just be the best you can be at that moment in time. And, that's all we can do as humans, right? It's just try our hardest. And that was my commitment. It's just, Carno, you're going to lay it all out. If you don't make it, you don't make it. But you're not going to give up. You're going to go down fighting. Just try your hardest. And that's what I did. I mean, I rolled out of bed that next morning, splashed some water on my face, and just said, okay, lace up your shoes, put one foot in front of the other, and and go.
The other side of all of this is it's one thing for you to get up and run each day, but you also have to depend on roads being blocked off, support guys, the city or county or state knowing you're actually going to be there. That's another aspect to the pressure that goes along with these things. And I know you had, I think it was in Atlanta during the 50 marathons, 50 days, 50 states, where, you know, there was some hassles with that. And then even running across as part of the Regis and Kelly, you guys, I think it was Arizona. You weren't allowed to run on the road, so you had to sort of take a little bit of a detour that added, I don't know how many miles to it. How do you deal with the fact that, okay, it's one thing I'm running from point A to point B, but now they've added C, D, and E to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, when they look at what I do, I don't think they realize the depth of you know, what transpires. I think you just outlined it perfectly. I mean, there's, you know, they had pulled permits. We needed special permits to cross through certain highways.
Sure.
Every single day. And so, you know, there was a lot riding on this. I had a complete logistics team. And they were, you know, tremendous. I had a support team. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure in this. And then there's this freaking TV crew.
Right.
They have no idea how much I was suffering. You know, they weren't runners.
Right.
A lot of them. And, you know, they wanted to do extensive interviews and stop me along the way, have me do all these corny sort of things. And I'm thinking, geez, I got to spend 2 or 3 hours with this TV crew, and I still have to cover 40 to 50 miles today. And, yeah, I mean, there was a point where, you know, I just felt so hassled by it all that I'll never forget. I got up just outside of Baltimore. And, you know, I couldn't sleep that night, and I thought, you know, I can't sleep. I'm supposed to have these, you know, motorcycle escorts tomorrow to take me through Baltimore, but I just want to run. So I literally just got out of bed, and I think that night I ran about, I think 75 or 80 miles. I didn't even alert anyone. I said, you know, screw it. I just need to go for a run to clear my head, and I just took off running, and I'll never forget calling them, you know, midway through it and saying, hey, guys, guess what? I'm no longer at the hotel room. I'm 50 miles down the road.
The other aspect of it that always, and I think this is from a scientific perspective, you were also a little bit of a human guinea pig because people were, you know, especially on the 50 marathons, 50 days, 50 states, checking your heart rate, checking your weight loss, all that type of stuff. And from that, what did you learn about when I look at you weighed 154 to start and then 153 at the end, and it seemed like you stayed so consistent. But what did you learn from that experience that helps you today with your training?
I think every experience like that, proves to you, I'll use a quote from the old race director of the Leadville Trail 100, you know, proves to you that you're better than you think you are.
Yeah.
And you can go further than you think you can. And until you try these things, you don't know, right? I mean, it was kind of a step into the unknown. And I was just amazed at how the human body can recuperate. I mean, I don't think we fully understand our powers of regeneration. But you were absolutely right. I mean, that's another element that was kind of painful. I was getting blood drawn every other day.
Yes.
I was having a needle stuck in my arm. But, yeah, the studies came back, and they said, your physiology actually looked like it kind of improved slightly over the course of 50 marathons.
And that's,
I think the 50th marathon in New York City was kind of telling. I mean, that, you know, being the fastest of all 50 is the last. So
3:30.
Yeah, well, no, 3 hours. It was 3 hours and
30
seconds.
3 hours, yeah, sorry. 3 hours and 30 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, 3 hours flat. You know, you've been in New York City. That's not necessarily the easiest marathon.
No, you got to weave through all these people.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's those bridges.
Yes,
those bridges,
it's a lot of climbing.
Daunting.
Yes, there's a lot of climbing.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll never forget, at the finish of that marathon, one of the race officials comes running over to me, and he's just saying, God, I can't believe, you know, you just ran 3 hours flat after 49 days of marathons on your legs. I mean, that's amazing. Were you trying to beat Lance? That was the first year that Lance had done his marathon, and I think I was like 20 seconds behind him.
Right, he just broke 3 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, and oh, he looked freaking horrible as well. He was covered in salt crust and his cotton mouth. I saw him. They kind of laid him down in the Suburban and drove him off. But I said to the guy, no, I wasn't trying to beat Lance. I had no desire. I wasn't even racing against anyone. I mean, the only person I wanted to beat was P. Diddy. That was the year P. Diddy ran the marathon. I saw that joker at the start, and he had all these gold chains around, this big posse of people, and I thought, if that guy beats me, even after 49 marathons, I'll be so humiliated.
That's funny.
So I slipped in ahead of P. Diddy, and all was good.
So now, what is the last time we chatted, you're talking about trying to run a marathon in every country in the world. I think it was like 208 at that time. I have no idea how many there are now. What is that, something that's still in the works?
Yeah, that's exactly my next dream is, I always say dream big, right? That's my
exactly.
next stretch goal is to try to do the same thing I did in 50 states in 50 days and, here in the U.S., but take it globally and run a marathon in every single country of the world in a one-year period. And there's now 204 countries.
Oh, see, if you wait a while, it's going to get under 200.
It's shrinking. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, the difficulties, I'm working with the UN and the State Department, to get all the necessary passports and visas and permits to get into all these countries. I really think it's important to, it's just running, right? But it's something that brings us together. And I don't want to leave out any country, including, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, North Korea. And it's just taking so long to pull this together because every time I'm kind of moving along with the State Department, we have these global flare-ups like we have right now.
Right.
They just say, Dean, we're committed to your project. Everyone's very supportive, but, we got to go dark on you. I mean, we just can't devote resources to this project right now when we've got these other crises to deal with. So hopefully the global political environment will mellow out a bit, and we can get this thing launched.
The hard part is, even when you start, you're talking about a year, and there's stuff happening every day politically. So, you could start this thing and then all of a sudden have to go dark.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be it'll be another adventure, Bob. You've been with me on a lot of adventures.
We have seen a lot of them. So speaking of all the different adventures, you won the Four Deserts Race Series in 2008, American Ultra Running Team World Championships 2005, 2008, and we talked about the 3,000 miles across the U.S. in 75 days. When you look back, what was was there one adventure that you liked more than the others?
Oh, man.
Or is it also almost like, which kid do I like best?
There are so many magical moments. I've been so blessed in my life, but I'll tell you, some of my favorites you've been involved in. I mean, running 700 miles from Sonoma to San Diego
for the premiere of the film.
Yeah, running all the missions in California. So
right.
Running to see all the missions and then culminating with the Rock and Roll San Diego. That was a prized.
That was cool.
Cherished moment. I mean, that was just my mom and dad and I.
Right.
Doing that one in a camper van. Yeah, that was tremendous. And I, the other the one I'll never forget is running from your offices, your old offices, down in
Solana Beach.
Up to Long Beach, and then paddling with those guys over to
Robin Benincasa.
Yeah.
And then running the first ever Catalina Eco Marathon.
I think it was like a 95 mile run and a 30 mile paddle.
Yes.
To Catalina, hopping out and running the marathon. But the most classic moment of that, the most classic memory of that entire thing is as you flew overhead in the helicopter, and we were out of food. We had no food, and I'm kind of moving my mouth up and down, pointing to it, saying, Babbitt, I need
Give me
food.
Some food.
And you kind of open that little window, and you push something out.
Yeah, yeah.
It fell down right next to us, and we paddled over to it, and I tried to scoop it up, and it was a sugar donut.
It was, yes.
And it soaked up so much salt water, I couldn't eat it.
It was from VG's Donuts. It was actually very good. You should have gone for that.
There's a sponsor plug for you.
So, yeah, that's probably the best thing you could do before running a marathon and after running 95 miles is to squeeze into a kayak and really crunch your legs up. I think that's probably recommended.
Oh, that 8-hour paddle after running that distance, in that one position was so brutal. I'll never forget. I mean, I'm going to embarrass Robin.
Oh.
But at a point, I was just, like at 5 hours into it, I'm like, I just have to stretch. I can't be sitting in this position. So I kind of turned around, and I let out a little gas.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, my God, I heard the ultramarathon man fart. I think it's the first.
And you've never done that before. So, strangest place you've been recognized, because you go from being, you know, a corporate guy to sort of becoming a, you know, a little bit of a global icon. People know you as ultramarathon guy. Where were you when somebody just walked up and was like, I can't believe this guy knows who I am out here in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, I mean, I get that all the time, and it's different people now. It's not just runners, and I think that, you know, that Live with Regis and Kelly, Run Across America.
Yeah.
I mean, you know the power of TV.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, just on my last trip, I was going through security, and this TSA agent, this, you know, kind of heavy-set, you know, middle-aged woman, he says, oh, my God, you're Dean. You're the ultramarathon guy. I followed you for 75 days. That was just the most amazing thing. And I'm looking at this woman. I mean, she just scanned my bags in the X-ray, and she sticks her head up and looks at me, and I thought, she's not even a runner.
Yeah,
she's not even athletic. But she said, she actually said, I started walking because of you. So, I mean, I get that kind of stuff globally now, and it's so heartwarming. And people say, you know, you have so many fans. Isn't that kind of, you know, overwhelming? And it's the kind of people you want to meet.
Of course.
It's not like I'm a rock star with a bunch of, you know, teeny boppers fawning at me. It's people that are athletes, mostly.
Exactly.
People I'd want to sit down and, you know, have a beer with anyway.
So when you were younger, I know you sleep about 4 hours a night, which blows me away. How long did it take you to go from being sort of your normal 8 hour a night guy to somebody who can not just survive on 4 hours a night, but actually function on it?
You know, it took about a month of me training myself, because I started realizing, you know, although I'm sleeping now, I'm laying in bed 7 to 8 hours. A lot of it, I'm just kind of restless. It's just, you know, kind of churning and thinking and so forth. I thought, you know, if you just get up and get on with it, you'll probably be better off. So it took about a month of just saying, okay, as soon as I start, you know, kind of waking up a little bit, I'm gonna get up. And after that point, my body just seemed to click into that mode, and, you know, and move forward. Now, you know, I don't want to tell people to do that, because I seem to be able to get by with a little sleep. And you know, my dad Nick, he's a crazy guy. He's the same way. So maybe there's some
family thing.
You know, family thing. Because I know, you know, there's a lot of other athletes. I mean, that, you know, 10 hours is good and 12 hours is better.
Yeah, Mark Allen. Mark Allen would be asleep half the day.
And, I mean, more, you know, we I always say, listen to everyone, follow no one. So,
exactly.
You know, find what works best for you.
In this day and age, when you're, you know, sort of in between adventures, what is a typical running week? Do you still run, you know, 50, 60 miles a week?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm preparing for this race. I think I might have mentioned, called the Spartathlon.
Oh, yeah, now tell me about that. I know you, I've seen you in your Spartan outfit before.
Yeah, we are Sparta, yeah. So it's a 153-mile road run, and it's, you know, it's a serious, serious challenge. So last weekend we were down in Santa Barbara visiting my daughter. She goes to school down in Santa Barbara, and as we were driving back home to the Bay Area, you know, we just passed a town called Gilroy, kind of south of San Jose, and I said to my wife, you know, I need to get a long training run in. Can you just stop the car? So I popped out, and I ran, I think it was close to 80 miles, just ran home, all night, yeah.
Wow.
I need a long, you know, some long base training. So, you know, last week I was, because I wasn't traveling last week, it was over 200 miles of training. You know, then, you know, it's offset by other weeks where I can barely get in 50 because I'm on the road constantly.
Wow. And you've been able to still stay pretty healthy.
Yeah, you know, I shouldn't say anything because I'll,
right.
You know,
I'm knocking on wood right
break
now.
Break my leg walking down the curb. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Bob, I've never had an injury, which people say is amazing, but I've never had an injury.
The fact that you've got yourself to the point where you can sleep 4 hours a night certainly has to help for a lot of these, you know, when you're basically running for 24 hours, 36 hours, all that type of stuff. So the Spartathlon, and after the Spartathlon, what's after that?
You know, after that, who knows? I mean, I've got, you know, I I do marathons like every weekend, as you know.
So sure.
I've got Chicago and New York and a couple marathons coming up. But after that, it's going to be I'm going to be focused on the world, the world run, as
world
we're calling
tour.
It.
Does any of this get old for you, Dean? I mean, do you ever sit back and go, man, I could have kept my job and I would have built up some tenure and I'd have this month saved up my 401k? Ever question what you did?
You know, I've got to be honest. Yeah, sure, there's been moments of self-doubt.
Yeah.
And like, what, especially when you're just completely spent.
Yeah.
Barely able to move. Like, what am I doing? But those moments pass.
Yeah.
And I look at my life and just think, I've had such a magical life. And I think, the thing that really keeps me going is how many people say that I've inspired them.
Exactly.
To be the best that they can be. And, inspiration is a two-way street, is what I've learned. And so many people, tell me their stories about, their life change or overcoming hardship or dealing with adversity. And I think, my gosh, what I've gone through is nothing compared to what you've gone through. And those sort of stories just keep me going.
I love it. Hey, Dean, I know you have to run off and do a clinic. I appreciate you taking so much time to catch up. And, yeah, this is the first week of Babbittville Radio. It's awesome to have you on.
Well, I just love your spirit. I mean, talk about adventure. I'm glad to be able to support. I'm honored to be one of your guests in the first week, and I can't wait to spread the word. I think you're going to go big, Bob. Just remember us, the little people, when you're a big time celeb.
What I love about you, Dean, is the fact that you when we first talked about the launch of this Catalina Eco Marathon, I was like, I'd like to come and do it, but we should do more than that. What do you mean? Well, I should run from your office, and we'll run to Long Beach, and then I'll paddle, and then I'll run the marathon. And I'm like, oh, my God. Because we had then people, and this, again, was way before big-time social media, but people wanted to run with you along the way, and we kept getting phone calls going, when's Dean going to get to San Clemente? He's already through. When's he going to get to San Juan? He's already through. When's he going to get to Long Beach? He's been there and gone. That type of stuff. It was really, really fun. I appreciate all that you've done
Stuff. You're saying this before social media, and there was probably 100 people that came out and ran with me. I'll never forget when I got to Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
It was getting close to midnight, and I come around the corner, and there's a pizza delivery guy standing there.
Yep.
Like, what are you doing? He's like, well, someone called in a pizza delivery. They wanted me to stand here and deliver a pizza to you.
Yeah. Well, I think you were the one who created that when you ran across, when you did your 50 marathons, 50 states. Hey, listen, I'm going to be at the corner of Apple and Elm at about 9. Deliver me a pizza. And you'd roll that thing up like a big old taco and boom, gone.
I'll never live that story down. People love that one, yeah.
I love that. Dean, congrats on everything you're doing. It's wonderful to have you in our world. And what you've done for not just for running, but people didn't know what the hell an ultramarathon was. And I think you helped people understand that it's really a place for self-discovery. It's really when you go beyond the marathon, you find out so much about yourself. And you've gone way, way, way beyond a marathon.
Yeah, I mean, there's the saying, adversity introduces a man to himself.
Exactly.
So I think we all, it was the Oracle of Delphi that I'll run by in this Spartathlon that said, know thyself. And that's certainly one way to do it.
I love it. Dean Karnazes has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by Core Sports, the best in women's athletic clothing. 10 miles, 20 bands. That's a Cal 1020 coming up on February 15th. And, of course, check out all of our interviews on iTunes and the 21st anniversary of Challenge Athletes Foundation, our San Diego Triathlon Challenge, coming up on October 18th and 19th weekend. Dean, thanks again, buddy.
Thanks for having me run by, Bob.
All right. Take care, Dean.
See you on the road.
Bye.